Welcome to the Energy Medicine and Healing Summit, where you'll discover how to take your health into your own hands from today's top energy medicine experts and healers. Share this powerful event with your friends and family, and join in our conversation on Facebook at The Shift Network. And now your host, Dondi Dalin.
Welcome, friends. Today we are with Reiki master and author Pamela Miles. Pamela has been practicing meditation and yoga for more than 50 years and Reiki for 30 years. She is internationally known for her pioneering work bringing spiritual practice to mainstream medicine, teaching Reiki at medical schools, including Yale and Harvard and major New York City hospitals, working with Dr. Oz, and as the author of the award-winning book, Reiki, A Comprehensive Guide. Pamela's work has been featured on NBC, CBS, CNN, Fox, U.S. News, World Report, New York Magazine, Allure, and Self. I can barely get that all out. Pamela, you are so accomplished, and thank you for being with us today. Hello.
Well, thank you, Dondi. Really, the pleasure and the honor is mine. And if I'm so accomplished, it's because there is so much interest in this work that we do, and I really appreciate being part of the summit.
Well, we're happy to have you. We are all very interested in hearing about Reiki today. Can you just start off by telling us the difference between Reiki and other healing modalities?
That's a great start, because contrary to most people's understanding, Reiki practice is actually not a healing modality. It is a spiritual practice. It has more in common with meditation and Qigong and prayer and yoga and other spiritual practices than it does, in fact, with energy medicine. But the confusion comes because there are always healing benefits to spiritual practice. All spiritual practice moves us toward our own unique center. And when we do that, when our systems find their natural alignment and harmony, coherence, integrity, whatever word appeals to you, then of course we let go of at least some of the things that are causing us problems. For example, pain is caught in the nervous system. Very often, doctors see this, that after the physical pathology that has given rise to the pain has healed, people still have the pain, and it's not much better. And so with Reiki practice, we start reorganizing. The individual system starts reorganizing itself from deep within in the direction of greater harmony and balance. And part of that process involves the downregulation of the nervous system. So what's different, you know, you might be thinking as a very experienced energy medicine practitioner, well, that's what I do too. And yes, it often is part of energy medicine techniques, which I want to be clear, I use myself. So I'm not saying, you know, it's a better than, it's just I want to invite people to look at Reiki practice in a broader context, because the difference is whether we are, kind of moving into the system and making something happen, or whether we're inviting the system to express its natural wholeness and wellness, its timeless spiritual core, more effusively, more enthusiastically. Make sense?
Yes, that is very intriguing. And I would like for you to tell us what a Reiki session looks like. So when a client enters the session room with the practitioner, is it different between all the practitioners and all the sessions, or are there similarities? If you could dive into that a little bit.
sure. I could dive into that one a lot. and you invited me to mention the diversity in Reiki practice, and that's a very important point to make, that there are absolutely no regulations or standards around Reiki practice. And I, in fact, agree with that. You know, I don't think we want the government telling us how to meditate or how to practice Reiki. But when people are paying a professional either for treatment or to teach them to self-practice, then it can get a little confusing because the public expects, understandably, that everybody who's practicing Reiki is doing the same thing in a pretty similar way, and that's just not true. So if you have ascertained that, you know, the person is in fact practicing Reiki, then you can be, you can have the expectation that you'll go into a room that is private, that is quiet. There might be gentle music playing, or you can always say, no, I prefer silence. That's what I always want to do. And you'll be fully clothed. You'll lie on a treatment table, which looks a lot like a massage table, but clothes on. And then you'll have your practitioner will place hands lightly on your head and the front of your torso, and we hope ask you to turn over and place hands on the back. So that's a question you might want to ask. So that would be for a full Reiki professional session, or even if you have a friend, you know, who's just learning and practices on family and friends. But it's also possible sometimes people cannot sit. Maybe the woman is quite pregnant. I mean, they cannot lie down. You know, a woman might be quite pregnant, or someone may have respiratory problems and cannot be flat. So you can also have somebody seated comfortably in a very supportive chair, even for a full treatment. But also, you can place, if you're Reiki trained, you can place your hands on someone even for a few moments and get that self-healing response started. So in that way, besides a professional session, Reiki practice is also very useful in emergencies or to center yourself before a presentation.
So what exactly is happening during this session? And thank you for spelling that out so well. You really painted a picture for us. And we, of course, are all familiar here with energy, but what exactly is the practitioner doing when they're practicing Reiki? Are they putting energy into the client's body? Are they pulling it out? Are they hoping that it flows? If you can touch on that.
Sure. So, again, it depends with whom you speak about this. And I should perhaps mention that, you know, I learned to practice Reiki in 1986, and I learned to practice in the way the practice was first brought from Japan to the United States in the late 1930s by a woman named Hawayo Takata, who had learned it in a year or so of studies in Japan, and her Japanese Reiki master, Chujio Hayashi. He came to Hawaii with her to help her bring the practice to the United States. And Hayashi was a direct student of the founder of this lineage, a Japanese man named Mikao Usui, U-S-U-I. So people often say to me, oh, you have such a stripped-down practice. Is like, no, actually, I didn't strip it down. This was the practice as it was brought to the U.S. And then Americans, you know how we like to make things bigger, better, longer, stronger? and how we didn't have a tradition of spiritual practice here aside from the Native American tradition, which most European-based Americans just don't know. So Americans knew a good thing when they saw it, and liked Reiki practice, and then, of course, you know, we're so generous, we want to give it to everybody else, but first we want to make it a little better. So a lot of that happened, and changes were made by people who really didn't practice long enough to understand how much can happen just by placing hands. So what we're really doing is not much at all. And that's kind of the difference that I was beginning to discuss between spiritual practice and healing modalities. Because in a healing modality, no matter how gentle it is, you have the intention of, I'm going to move in there and help this system reorganize. Whereas with a spiritual practice, there's tremendous restraint on the part of the practitioner. Ask anybody who's tried to meditate and has felt frustrated by it. You know, we don't do restraint really well in this culture. And what's helpful about Reiki practice is that we have a very quick feedback loop. I mentioned the down regulation of the nervous system, which people commonly experience as relaxation. So at least we notice if we're able to be still and quiet for even a little bit, and a little bit might be just a few minutes, we start to notice that breathing changes, breathing slows down. Maybe we can see the heart rate. You know, sometimes you can see the carotid artery, or if it's your own heart rate, you can feel it. The person, the receiver, may start salivating, you know, lying on the table, starts swallowing like mad a few times, or we hear belly gurgles, borborygmi. All of these indications of a system that's moving into repose and moving into being able to access its own self-healing mechanisms, because the engagement of the digestive tract is so important for people to regain and maintain health. So the Reiki practitioner is simply mindfully, if practicing on someone else, mindfully placing hands. Traditionally, we actually place hands lightly on the person. This is how Reiki was practiced from the very beginning. We can practice just off the body if there's a reason to. If there's an open wound and our hands aren't clean, or there's a burn that can't tolerate touch, or any presence too close to it, you can lift your hand off the body. And nowadays, some people practice totally off the body, for example, and they're waving their arms, but this, just for people to know that this is not the traditional practice. I've always thought that was interesting, Dondi, because if you think of Japan in the 1920s, because this practice started between 1922 when Usui had his awakening and 1926 when he died, this wasn't a touchy-feely culture, and yet they touched to practice Reiki. And so in our culture, which is much more comfortable touching appropriately, and where we have stacks and stacks of research that document the healing capacity of appropriate human touch, many Americans have opted to get off the body. I think they do that because they're more likely to sense something subtle in their own hands faster. I can't speak for that to that for sure, but I know in my own experience, you know, the sensations in my hands started showing up pretty quickly. And those sensations guide us. So we're not doing a lot. We're kind of following our hands. Mrs. Takata used to say, let your Reiki hands teach you.
Well, that's a wonderful statement to live by when you're involved with Reiki, for all of us to be students in whatever we're doing. So to let it teach you is very profound. Is Reiki as effective if somebody is doing it as a self-practice as opposed to going to a practitioner?
Oh, yes. In my experience, they're both very, very effective, and yet they're different. So when you practice on yourself, then you get to experience that, you know, delightful intimacy of solitude, me, myself, and I practicing here, and you don't have to be mindful. You know, your hands are on yourself, and you can drift in and out of sleep, or I think more often what happens is people drift in and out of a state called yoga nidra, which is a state in which the nervous system and the subtle nervous systems really settle and profound healing happens. When we're practicing on someone else, of course we need to be mindful because we're creating the conditions, the situation for that person to be able to do what we can do ourselves when we practice on ourselves. Somebody needs to be conscious in case a fire alarm goes off. But that's all we're doing, and the constant between those two situations, self-practice and practice received from someone else, is that the most important part of the practice is the response of the receiver, which unfolds organically from deep within the system, and that's a reason why Reiki practice is so safe. The practitioner isn't deciding what's going to happen to you. The wisdom of your own self-healing is charting all that.
So in this self-healing, how does Reiki help a person physiologically for happiness and healing? Because I hear almost like miracles happening from Reiki, and that people feel more joy and they find their health again. So how does Reiki, kind of as a self-practice, set us up for that?
When we have a self-practice, I encourage my students to practice on themselves about 30 minutes every day, and that can sound like a burden, except that most people practice in bed while they're falling asleep or waking up. And so what is happening during that practice, number one, they don't have to stay conscious. They just place their hands and then they move them after a while. But the system is responding and finding its own balance point, its own center. You know, there is no one center of the universe. We all have a center within us, and that center is kind of a moving target. So feeling centered and aligned with ourselves in the morning when we're getting up to face our day is very different than the center that we want to experience at night before we fall asleep. But physiologically, the same thing seems to be happening, and we have a little bit of research that supports this. The downregulation of the neuroendocrine system, which means, first of all, we stop hurting ourselves. Okay? I'm going to pause a moment and let that sink in. Because when we are functioning in this hyper-stress state, even if we have acclimated ourselves to it, it's still not normal. And it's not healthy. So when the nervous system downregulates, the neuroendocrine system downregulates, and we stop flooding our bloodstreams with cortisol and adrenaline, we stop hurting ourselves. And then we move into a place of experiencing, I'm just going to say it here, oneness. You know, that timelessness. People have different words for it, but it's a sense of profound well-being. It's the difference between everything's going to be all right, you know, and I'm feeling the rightness in life and myself just as it is right this moment. So it has really a profound effect on our states physiologically, and this is why I say to my students all the time, take care of your state, and your state takes care of everything else. And I want to, if I may, give you a couple of short stories that illustrate that. One happened just, notice I didn't ask, I didn't wait for you to say it, okay. Sorry.
We're
Everybody
ready.
Loves stories.
That's okay.
So this happened recently, and I got the feedback while I was leading a retreat in Mexico, and I was just thrilled. A woman was in a recent first-degree class who had come to New York from out of the country to open the New York office of the business she worked for. She worked like crazy for the first year, and then she decided she had to devote herself to taking care of herself. So she came to the class, and she was a little preoccupied, a little skeptical, lovely woman, but, you know, I could see she was looking to see if we were all drinking some Kool-Aid. And then she came back the next day, because I teach first degree in three sessions of 3 to 4 hours each. And she came back the next day and surprised everybody with her report. She told how she always had the TV on when she was home. She would come home from the office, turn the TV on, shut it off as she went to bed, turn it on first thing in the morning, and turn it off when she left for work. But that night when she went home, she didn't want the TV on. Not only did she not want the TV on, but she totally forgot to take her sleeping medications and forgot to put her mouth guard in, and was amazed when she woke up in the morning, having slept through the night and had no pain in her face, which was why she needed the mouth guard, you know, because she was clenching her jaw so intensely during the night. And then these improvements continued. Oh, and she spontaneously stopped taking her binge eating medication. Checked with her doctor. He said, not a problem. She stopped some other medication she was on that she didn't like, again with her doctor's approval, and the sleep medication she knew she didn't have to take that every night if she didn't want to. She hasn't been taking any of those medications, and a month later she said that she's eating healthy, and most surprising to her, she's getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and going to the gym for an hour before going to the office. So these were changes she had never even imagined. For other people, you know, it may be something simpler. Like one person recently came to quit caffeine and wound up quitting smoking. She still drinks coffee. Another came to stop smoking, and she stopped drinking coffee, but she still smokes, although less.
Well, these are fantastic changes in people's lives. You mentioned feeling the rightness in our state of mind. Why does it make sense for us to take care of our state of mind?
Because when we feel better, and that's what I mean by taking care of our state of mind, you know, tend a state in which we are aligned with ourselves and therefore can feel the alignment, that we are part of something bigger than ourselves. You know, it seems to me the human dilemma is to experience not connection, Dondi, because connection implies separation, but oneness, to experience that profound oneness within ourselves. That's a spiritual experience. We can only have that within ourselves. And then to express the gifts of that spiritual experience through our individuality, because there are actions that we have to take that only we can take. There are talents we each have that if we don't give to this world, the world will never have those blessings. So when we take the time to tend our state, and with Reiki practice it's very easy, although it may not be the only thing you need, we feel better. And when we feel better, we function better. And when we function better and feel better, what happens, like the woman whose story I just shared, we very easily make better choices that help us to continue to feel better and function better. Choices that are good for us, but also that are good for everyone, good for the world, good for the planet. So instead of trying to take care of the 1,001 details that impose on every single day, if we start by taking care of the one detail we have some control over, then our ability to share that heartfelt oneness with others is, I'm going to use the word guaranteed because that's my experience.
Pamela, this has been terrific. We're coming up to the end of our time together, but I would like to ask you, as a self-practice, why does Reiki give you such a fast return on your investment?
It's because that downregulation of the nervous system happens so quickly. You know, the neuroendocrine system, you can think of it as the gateway between the unseen and the seen worlds. And granted, you know, we can't really see our neuroendocrine system, but you know what I mean. So when it's very responsive, you know, the wind blows and we get irritated, or the wind blows and we feel, oh, that's so refreshing. We notice it right away. That's the neuro, the nervous system, and then the endocrine system responds. So if we notice it and we get irritated, that's one cascade of hormones. If we notice it and we're loving it, that's an entirely different cascade of hormones. And those hormones that we bathe in internally determine so much of our human experience. And then the way that we feel either puts us in line to be consciously creative or to be unconsciously reactive. We cannot escape the responsibility for our actions. We are creating all the time. But to create consciously instead of reacting in a sea of stress hormones, you know, this is what it seems to me makes being a human such an amazing and enjoyable, joyful thing. And it happens in a split second.
Well, you've taught us a lot today about Reiki, not only from an experienced practitioner, but also as a self-practice, and that it can move us toward our center. And when we move toward our center, we can calm our nervous system, where pain often gets caught. It is a spiritual practice. You've told us about what happens in the session and how hands are placed lightly on a person to bring calm, take away pain, regulate the digestive tract, and so much more. It really brings the experience of oneness, which can help us feel better and function better. And Pamela, you are offering the listeners today a very exclusive, free Q&A session with you, a master Reiki practitioner who has been practicing for 30 years. And I have a link for the listeners, so I'll give that right now so everybody can hear it. This Q&A will be available at energymedicinesummit.com/Pamela. I'll repeat that, energymedicinesummit.com/Pamela. And not only that, the listeners and whomever joins you on this session will get to experience a little Reiki session. Is that true?
Yes. For anybody who wants to, I will do some distant practice At some point in our Q&A. And anyone who's just interested in the talk part and doesn't want to experience practice, you know, there's always an opt-out because we don't want people to feel that they have to participate at a level that they don't want to.
Well, that is such a valuable gift. Thank you for offering that to us. And is there anything else that you would like to add today before we say goodbye to this wonderful session?
Two quick things, if I can push it a little. One is that if you decide to learn to practice Reiki for yourself or to work with a professional, please do your diligence and research that. And this is something that we can talk about in the Q&A. But basically, the question you want to ask is, does that person practice hands-on self-Reiki every day? For me, that's the litmus test. Everything else can, you know, be varying approaches, but if the person doesn't value the practice enough to use it in his or her own life, that tells you a lot right there. And the second is, quickly, because I hate to send people off without giving them something right now, there are Reiki precepts that you can practice without any training, and they're very simple. Today only, meaning right now, this moment, do not worry, do not anger. With thankfulness, work diligently, and be kind to others. Now, if hearing do not worry, do not anger makes you worried and angry, just put them aside. That's not the point. But let's focus on the with thankfulness, work diligently. I imagine that everybody with us knows how to work diligently. But most of the time in this culture, we work diligently out of a sense of not being quite enough. So put a moment of thankfulness before you dive into your effort. In this way, you're practicing gratitude, and then your efforts are motivated by that sense of gratitude and being a part of something bigger than you and wanting to give back instead of feeling like you're not good enough.
Thank you, Pamela, and thank you to all of our listeners today.
Thank you, Dundee.
Thank you for joining us for the Energy Medicine and Healing Summit, brought to you by the Shift Network. You can add every teaching and transcript to your personal library by visiting energymedicinesummit.com/upgrade. To learn more about awakening to your full potential, and together co-creating a world that works for all, visit theshiftnetwork.com. Thank you again for joining us and for sharing this life-changing information with your friends and family.